This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
At CBS News Philadelphia, we know this community by heart. Hey family, this is Yuki Washington. In our newsroom, the mission is clear. Make our communities better places to live. Every day, we tell stories that reflect heart, hustle, home, and plenty of Philly pride. If it's local to you, it's local to us. CBS News Philadelphia, finding heart in every beat.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Friday afternoon, October 4th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The Labor Department's jobs reports for September is today's headliner. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like there are two stories to come out of this jobs report. First off, there is the headline number for the month of September, which is well above analysts' expectations. And also that we saw some upward revisions in previous employment reports that sparked all sorts of anxiety about the health of the job market.
Yeah. Hi, Rob. The strong report today, you really need a magnifying glass to find much that's negative. There are some trends below the surface that are worth watching, though. So we're gonna keep our view for a soft landing and not just a no landing.
And what are some of the trends inside that report that are potentially of some concern to you?
Yeah, things that are worth watching is that the work week. The problem here is that you get a month where something strange happens and you get a blip higher, or next month probably with the hurricane and the strikes, you get a blip lower. You got to look past that and look at the trend. And the trends here in average work week are still slowing. And as work week slows, obviously, if you're working your employees less, you're probably not going to be hiring more in the future. So the numbers there in terms of work week are pointing to lower hiring going forward. The labor force participation rate also held steady. That should be going up if the job market is that strong. And what's more, the average length of unemployment, so the length of time that people are out of work and still looking, that rose significantly. And it shows that there's, again, trouble for at least some people finding work. So there are some things below the surface that are still consistent with the trends we've been seeing. I wouldn't put too much stock, sorry for the pun, wouldn't put too much by this big top line number when you've got some things below the surface that are still trending lower.
And that top line number, 254,000 new jobs in September, that is up from the Dow Jones consensus of 150,000. Now, when we look at the labor force participation rate, when we look at some of those figures that you cited, is that weakness compared to what we have experienced coming out of the depths of the COVID pandemic, or is that weak compared to the pre-pandemic economy of 2019?
I'd really say neither. Well, not necessarily. In terms of the participation rate, the pre-COVID peak was 63.3% of the labor force working. Here it's still at 62.7% and holding steady, and that's a little bit better than it was at the bottom of the pandemic, obviously, but still not to back where it was pre-COVID. But as for the rest, in terms of duration of unemployment, in terms of the average work week, those are trends that I'm looking at are strictly post-pandemic, and they are trending downward.
And then how does this change the math for the Fed? Because they are going to cut interest rates once again at their policy meeting in November, and there was a belief that maybe they would cut by a half a point. Does this make a 25 basis point cut pretty much a lock?
Yeah, it does. And we've been thinking a 25 in November and December makes the most sense. And in fact, Fed Chairman Powell earlier this week said, cautioned the markets that, hey, look, you know, we're not going to jump in here as though there's a two-alarm fire. There really isn't. We wanted to get things off to a fast start, but now we're just going to be data-dependent going forward. And we do expect more rate cuts as the economy does slow. but it's just not going to be another 50 basis point or half a percentage point cut in November.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis, thank you for joining us today.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Retail pharmacy giants Walgreens and CVS are both struggling as shrinking profits prompt store closures. Let's take a closer look with Bruce Jabson, healthcare writer for Forbes in Chicago. Bruce, thank you for joining us today. And Bruce, not too long ago, it seemed like Walgreens and CVS and some other corner pharmacies may have reinvented the healthcare model by putting more doctor's office services under their roof. And the concept hasn't really, they haven't really realized their potential.
No, well, here's the deal. There's first of all, it's a tale of two cities. We got to separate Walgreens from CVS. So Walgreens is, they had some issues. They spent billions of dollars on this Chicago-based company, VillageMD, to attach doctor practices to their stores. Didn't work out. They thought that they would fill those clinics right away. A little more complicated than that. And they are writing that off and moving away from that. That cost billions of dollars. CVS is a little bit of a different animal in the sense that they also own the nation's third largest health insurance company, Aetna, which has 25, 26 million customers. They have CVS Caremark, which is a large pharmacy benefit management company, and some other provider assets, including another Chicago-based doctor staff clinic company, which treats seniors, and I can get into that in a little minute. So bottom line is these companies used to get a lot of revenue from the front of the store where people would go in there for, you know, you could get a hair dryer there, you could get, you know, all sorts of items and whatever. A lot of that you can order off Walmart's website, Amazon's website. Shopping patterns and changes, aging baby boomers, you know, I mean, not that we baby, you know, I'm not a baby boomer. Baby boomers are not getting stuff in the store, but they're trying to fill that with healthcare services. And it's kind of been a little bit of a trial and error. CVS's MinuteClinics, I think that's been kind of successful. CVS says they are. CVS's stock has not gotten hit a little bit because their costs were higher on their health insurance business. Walgreens has a little bit more trouble. They're trying to invest more in specialty pharmacy because more people are on more expensive drugs, not pills and capsules, which you can get by mail, but things that you have to have infused, you know, cancer treatments, rheumatoid arthritis treatments, very complicated drugs. They're investing more in that, but they're just not turning the corner just yet. And so I think the problem is in people are just not going to the pharmacy and the corner drugstore for what they need, for what they used to. And Walgreens has been slow to, you know, get to address habits. And they've been slow on the digital side as well to get people to order things and so forth. And you also have the development of telehealth. I mean, in the pandemic, that took off because you could get your doctor on the phone.
And Bruce, you bring up a good point. I think this has been something that's been going on for a decade, and that is kind of the central tension at a place like at these convenience stores that also serve as healthcare centers, is that you can take advantage of the pharmacy services in back and possibly some healthcare services in the back of the store. But on the front of the store, they have cigarettes and beer and snacks. And for the longest time, there was a lot of questions about it. How can these two different categories of merchandise live together? And now we're seeing, you know, people aren't smoking as much as they were before, and maybe they go to a different place to get that case of beer before the football game.
Clear skies and
apparently that is shaping up to be a real problem for some of these stores.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, in Chicago, I think there was a company called Drizzly. I'm in the pandemic. I don't want to give away my drinking habits here, but you know, rules changed where you didn't have to even go to the liquor store to get your booze. You could get it delivered. And, you know, there was that Drizzly company, Drizzly app, now Uber Eats, different. You can get, the liquor store will deliver to your house now. So what do you need to go to Walgreens for? That type of thing. So there's a lot of things, a lot of competition. You know, good luck in trying to figure it out. Now, let me tell you something that's a little positive here. So in Illinois and certain states, they have passed a law to allow your pharmacist to prescribe you a medication. 6 common conditions. The doctors hate that. Well, of course they do. So if you go in to get a COVID test, for example, and you find out you have COVID, under the old way, you would have to go to your doctor, get an appointment, schedule maybe a telehealth visit, whatever, then get the prescription to call it in. COVID, now you can go to, in Illinois and certain other states, you can go to the drugstore, get a COVID test. You're like, oh my God, I'm test positive for COVID. The pharmacist right there can give you Paxlovid, you know, one of those things. And for other things too, like strep throat, pink eye, and all those type of things. That's a good thing for Walgreens, where pharmacists actually prescribe. Not major, I know there's doctors probably driving off the road saying, what are you doing? You're picking our pocket. It's not a lot of major things, but this stuff goes on in other countries. And so there is some promise there for Walgreens and CVS to get more people into their store, to get more revenue from these type of minor ailments, and then maybe they'll add services over time. It's just taken some time. And CVS, as a deal with Oak Street Health, which they spent $10 billion on, a company based in Chicago, where they're reformatting some of their former closed stores into these Oak Street CVS health centers, where seniors who have Medicare Advantage coverage can go to these stores. There's 3 of them in Chicago. And they have like a community room, and they have all sorts of stuff. They think once they mature, they're going to make about $7 million in profit per store. But there again, Wall Street gets a little impatient, and you know, that's what happens. And on the insurance side with Aetna, these health insurance companies made a killing in the pandemic because people were not going to the doctor. We weren't going to the doctor. The clinics were shut down. You were afraid to go. You thought you might get COVID, all this other stuff. And so health insurance companies made billions of dollars in 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023. Guess what? Now people are going to the doctor and they're getting their services. There's been a pent-up demand for services, colonoscopies, whatever. And now insurance companies are having to pay the claims. And I'll just say it. Guess what? The health insurance companies are paid to manage these costs, and they're not managing them as well, or they didn't predict that the pent-up demand for healthcare services would take this long.
Bruce Japsen, Forbes healthcare writer, thank you for joining us.
Hey, family. This is Yuki Washington from CBS News Philadelphia. In our newsroom, the mission is clear. Make our communities better places to live. And with our innovative and immersive Next Weather virtual studio, we keep you and your family prepared and protected. If it's local to you, it's local to us. CBS News, Philadelphia, finding heart in every beat.
WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
AI-generated and misleading images of Hurricane Helene are all over social media. Joining us to talk about it is Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions and member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force in Chicago. Jerry, thank you for joining us today. And this is a disturbing spin on something that's been happening on social media for a long time, where somebody shares something that's too good to be true. And the picture I'm talking about in particular is an AI-generated image, and it looks obviously like an AI-generated image of a young girl holding a puppy in what appears to be the wreckage of Hurricane Helene in North Carolina. It has been shared far and wide, and one thing I noticed seeing this on Facebook today, and that is people will say to the original poster, that's AI, that's fake, and then the poster says, so what? I'm posting this to raise awareness. So they know it's fake, but they like the attention, so they do it anyway.
This has been going on for a while. They take any type of catastrophe or anything that's in the news, and they spin it somehow on social media, trying to get money, trying to get you to click on something. And in many cases, if you click on something on Facebook, they're going to grab your account information and start then going after your friends and trying to get their information. So it's really dangerous. You have to be careful on what you click on.
But it seems like the more frustrating thing here is that we could say on the radio, this is clearly bogus. You are spreading false information. You are passing along something that is not true. And now you have people saying, yeah, I know that, but they're giving me the attention that I want. I'm getting the engagement. And how do you fight back against that?
Yeah, I don't really know. You're right. You know, people just want to, you know, to be involved. They want people to look at them. And, you know, the thing is, for the people who will listen, we have to make sure that they understand, you know, AI images, if you look at the image pretty specifically, you'll see that the images for people sometimes are a little fuzzy. They might have five or six, you might have six fingers instead of five, and they may have their image being brought into another picture. You know, there's situations where they had AI where one lady had three legs, and you didn't look real close, you didn't see it. So those are things that you can look at to see if it's a real image or not. The other thing you can do is you can go to images.google.com, and you can copy the picture and then upload it into images.google.com, and it'll tell you if that's an image that was used somewhere else, because a lot of these, they're taking images from other hurricanes or other disasters, and they're posting them in there. So there's ways to tell if these are real or false images. But for the people who just want to believe it, I don't know what we can do.
Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions, member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
This is Chicago's News, Traffic, and Weather Station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Ports on the East and Gulf Coasts are back to business with a strike by workers called off for now. A third person is now charged in a deadly shooting at a Halloween gathering in the suburbs 3 years ago. It's Entrepreneur Friday, a conversation with the owner of a business that boasts locations in two Chicago neighborhoods. And there's concern the end may be near for a low-cost airline. WBBM Business. The markets are higher. The Dow is up 199 points. NASDAQ up 145. The S&P 500 up 31. 68 degrees right now under partly sunny skies, going up to 72. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. The strike by workers at ports on the East and Gulf Coasts has ended, at least for a few months. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg telling CBS News.
Credit goes to the parties who reached a deal. Union workers who have been seeking for a long time to get wage increases that deal them in on the profitability of this industry, and companies that came a long way off of their original position in order to get this done.
The workers will stay on the job until January 15th as negotiators work on the remaining issues. A 23-year-old man from Joliet is accused of a shooting 3 years ago that left three people dead and 10 others wounded. David A. Grijalva is charged with 18 felony counts, including first-degree murder. He was taken into custody yesterday by the Will County Sheriff's Police and the U.S. Marshals Service. Two other men in their 20s already charged with murder for the 2021 shooting at a Halloween party in Joliet Township. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher and gaining some altitude. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jay Hatfield, CEO of Infrastructure Capital Partners in New York. Jay, thank you for joining us today. And let's kick off the conversation with your take on the September employment report, which was well above analysts' expectations.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be on. We actually weren't surprised by the strong report. What a lot of investors don't focus on is that a key driver of the economy is really the housing sector. And the housing sector was starting to roll over, but it got a big boost because the 10-year Treasury rallied in anticipation of Fed rate cuts. And I think most of your listeners probably have recognized that mortgage rates have come way down. So we believe the U.S. economy is quite strong. It's the no landing scenario, which means no recession. And this level of job growth of over 200,000 is consistent with a steadily growing, healthy economy.
And what does this mean for future interest rate cuts? I mean, the terminal rate is still in restrictive territory. Does this mean that the Fed has room to cut by half a percentage point come April, or will they do a quarter point?
Well, we thought the market got ahead of itself by assuming we were going to have 50 basis point rate cuts. And in fact, you may have heard of the Fed funds futures. We're actually short the Fed funds futures, so real people actually trade them. And we're making money on that trade today. So it's really, we're going to be back to 25 basis points every meeting, so that means 50 more this year. And right now, the Fed's own forecast is another 100 next year. We think it could be a little bit higher than that. So we're on a steadily declining course of interest rate cuts, and we think the 10-year Treasury will come down, and we think mortgage rates will actually go sub 6%, which will make it attractive again for home buyers to enter the market.
The VIX is down just a little bit today, so that indicates that maybe traders aren't nearly as concerned about the trajectory of war in the Middle East as they might have been several days ago.
Well, certainly what we found over the last two or three years is that the U.S. fundamentals usually overcome international stress. And it's also important to note that earnings season is next week, which is usually a positive for the market. But the VIX is still, given that we're near all-time highs, the VIX is still a little bit higher than you would normally expect it to be in this kind of straight-up market. So that does reflect that we're likely to have an attack over the weekend or maybe on the anniversary of the war a year ago. So investors are nervous, and you are seeing oil prices up quite a bit over the last week. So that is an overhang. That's probably why the market actually faded a little bit today. So that is something that people are focused on. We have a 2% increase in oil. So it's still out there. If it weren't for that, the market would be rallying higher and the VIX would be lower.
And then very quickly, looking back at the September employment report, and that's not only was it a very strong number for this month, but the previous months, which caused all sorts of anxiety, have been revised upwards. So that seems to bolster your case that the economy was strong and is strong and continues to chug along.
Absolutely. And one should be aware that the employment report is both inaccurate and volatile. It's very difficult to survey the whole United States and figure out the exact level of employment. So investors should always take it with a grain of salt. Market tends to overreact. And so don't panic if we have one month of data that's bad. But this more is consistent with the view we're not going to have recession. And I would urge people to focus not on the consumer, but rather the more volatile housing sector. That's caused 11 out of the 12 recessions since World War II.
Jay Hatfield, CEO of Infrastructure Capital Partners in New York. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, an update on a Chicago business that we've been following since its founding more than a decade ago.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and today we're checking in with a Chicago business owner who's teamed up with her husband for a successful venture in the liquor industry. We welcome in Carly Katz, owner of Bottles and Cans, with two locations in Chicago, one, the original one in the North Center neighborhood, and the other in Edgebrook. Carly, thank you for joining us today.
And
you've been on our show a number of times talking about trends in cocktails and in the wine, spirits, and beer industries. But let's just talk about how you got into business yourself. 12 years ago, you and your husband decided to take the plunge, open that first location on Lincoln Avenue in the North Center neighborhood. And in a world of going to the grocery store, or in a world of going to like a big chain liquor store the size of a warehouse, what did you do to make your location unique in that neighborhood?
Well, honestly, a lot of it was we were kind of watching the trend of craft beer and where it was going. Because we were looking at, this is 2012, that's when the boom happened. That's when you started seeing all these little breweries pop up, and my husband at the time was actually helping to develop a beer program for a local distribution company. And through all of this, like these samples coming in, I didn't have like a ton of love for beer at that point, but I also had no idea that beer could be what the craft scene has created. In my head, it was just like Miller Lite, which is fine and dandy, but that's what I thought it happened to be, just like out there. And then as we slowly, you know, started kind of getting more and more into it, I'm like, this is really like picking up, like lots of people are talking about this. You know, what if we do something more? than, you know, just what he was doing with his job. And, you know, like all life-changing decisions and huge financial obligations, I think we probably decided this over, like, tequila. And slowly but surely, like, each little step got us closer and closer. And then that moment when we signed the lease on our first property, that was kind of the point of no return. It was probably one of the most exciting and scary days of either of our lives, because there was just no turning back at that point. It was keep going. Let's see how this goes.
Now, Carly, so, I used to live in the neighborhood. I used to live in North Center, and you got on my radar about a decade ago because Bottles and Cans on Lincoln Avenue, you carried a particular brand of pumpkin flavored beer from St. Louis that I could not find anywhere else except at Bottles and Cans. And was that
the Schlafly?
Yes, it was the Schlafly. Was that the edge, though? Was that the thing that gave you a leg up over some of the other locations in the neighborhood? Because if you don't know the geography of North Center, the old Half Acre Brewery used to be right up the street from you.
Yep. We had them, and they were like, they opened us with open arms, or welcomed us with open arms when we first went in. And then in that time, though, like Beguiled Brewing, Dovetail, Spiteful also was once upon a time right there. You know, a couple of other breweries that have, you know, since gone or moved over to other locations. But that area just kind of became this like wonderful breeding ground of craft beer, like the entire scene, and Half Acre being such a wonderful anchor for that, because they had already kind of done a lot of the legwork before we all got, like, you know, on the same train with them. But it was amazing to kind of watch people's reaction to us, because we weren't a regular liquor store. We were like seeking out these kind of interesting newer beers. And in the very beginning, we were only going to be a beer store. That's what we were going to focus on. And North Center, being the neighborhood that it is, there's a tremendous amount of people looking for other things, not just within the beer category, but all of a sudden we're like getting into like small batch wines, and all of a sudden all these distilleries are popping up all over the city. And it was such a wonderful time to like be in that industry, as you watch these people like build their brands and grow with like all of us together. It was wild.
Carly Katz, owner of Bottles and Cans in Chicago, two locations, the original one in North Center, the other in Edgebrook. Thank you for joining us today. Still to come, the future looks bleak for the low-cost Spirit Airline.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Shares of Spirit Airlines are sharply lower as fears of bankruptcy loom. It leads to the question, if you're a passenger holding tickets, should you be concerned? We welcome in Joe Schwederman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University, based in Chicago. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And Spirit Airlines is in a bit of a quandary, especially after the federal government or a proposed merger was rejected. If Spirit does seek bankruptcy protection, Joe, will it continue flying after the filing?
You know, this is a tough one, because Spirit warned before the federal government ruled that the merger with JetBlue, the acquisition, that they may not be able to survive. And people thought there was a bit of a bluster with that. But now it's kind of coming true. The airline's really on the edge of a cliff, and they got these big debts coming due. And there's so many passengers that love Spirit because they figured out the, you know, the no-frills option. So this is a big deal for Chicago, which has a lot of service. And so there's going to be a lot of attention for people to buy tickets as to exactly what's going to happen. Is their trip going to be canceled? Are they going to get refunds? And things are a little murky, unfortunately. Usually, credit card companies, booking sites, and so forth are able to refund when there's a bankruptcy. So consumers often can rest easy, but there's a little bit of uncertainty with that since Spirit is so big.
History doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I'm getting bringing back memories of Midway Airlines basically shutting down in 1991 after another proposed merger. I mean, way back when it was with Northwest Airlines that was seen as kind of the airline salvation, was not allowed. And they stopped flying. What happened back then, Joe, and how were passengers affected when Midway Airlines shut down at Midway Airport in 1991?
Yeah, good memories of that. I mean, Midway Airlines started the whole renaissance at our, you know, second largest airport. And I was at United at the time, and we scratched our head thinking, are they going to make a go of it? And they had a really good run. But the airlines figured out how to compete, and Midway ended up closing. They moved to a different airport and tried to come back. So we lost a kind of a airline that really made our second airport a success. Southwest, of course, later came and now dominates that airport with a mega hub. But this has been a huge problem since deregulation of these bankruptcies. And I think, thankfully, consumer protection laws have been upped. So consumers often first in line in bankruptcy proceedings, not first, but they're considered heavily that they get refunds. With Spirit's a little bit murkier, though, because they have this massive debt coming due, and it's going to be a messy bankruptcy. I suspect they'll keep flying and find a solution, but those could be famous last words.
Joe Schwederman, professor of public services, director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's show, just go to our stream, skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.
At CBS News Philadelphia, we know this community by heart. Hey family, this is Yuki Washington. In our newsroom, the mission is clear. Make our communities better places to live. Every day, we tell stories that reflect heart, hustle, home, and plenty of Philly pride. If it's local to you, it's local to us. CBS News Philadelphia, finding heart in every beat.